This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we bring in Jeff Eidelson. And Jeff is the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. Jeff, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be with both of you this morning.
Thank you. What a great day for you. What a busy day. Just how hectic is it for you right now? And there's such a great buzz for the hall today because we know we have new members going in.
We do, and we've got four really deserving guys that are going to join Jack Morris and Alan Trammell in July in Cooperstown. And, you know, for Cleveland, this is a long time coming with Jim Thome. First ballot, but still nonetheless, I mean, for what he did for that city is unbelievable. And honestly, all these guys going in together in July is going to make for an absolutely unbelievable Hall of Fame weekend in Cooperstown.
Jeff, with Jim Thome topping 600 home runs in an era where home runs were tainted in many cases, and nothing ever attached to him, I think that makes it a little more special, especially based on so many things that happened during that era.
Well, and just, you know, for Jim, knowing Jim himself and his profound respect for the game and for fans, it's wonderful to see him go in. You're right. The 612 home runs in that era is unbelievable. And, I know that that's just one part of, you know, how good of a player he was. I mean, hit .276, his on base and slugging was huge. And he's in the, you know, had the great ability to draw a walk. But, you know, the home runs are big, and eighth all time is nothing to sneeze about. And it's a very deserving election for Jim.
Jeff, you know, we're sitting here and we're just kind of debating, especially when we look at Omar Vizquel's name down the list, which 37% on a first ballot, we both think is very good for Omar. Just first of all, your thoughts on that, and then I'm going to get into offense versus defense and how to get into Cooperstown. But your thoughts on Omar, because I think that 37% on a first ballot bodes well for him, better than maybe some people thought.
It does. I mean, it sort of underscores how difficult it really is to make the Hall of Fame. There's only been 52 guys to go in on the first ballot. Wow. Or 54 with Jim and Chipper going in this year. So it's very hard to make it on the first ballot. I mean, 54 guys out of 19,000.
That's amazing.
So it is. So, I mean, it's a small number. And the beauty of Hall of Fame elections is that there are 10 years to continue to build your case. And as players will say, well, my numbers haven't changed. What's the difference? You know, a lot of it has to do when you end up when you end up on the ballot and how you're compared. Again, only 1% of those to play at the major league level end up with a plaque in Cooperstown at all. There's only 226 players in the Hall of Fame. But when I think of Omar,
yay.
I mean, this guy was
on the DH show on CBS Sports Radio. So
hang on,
tonight,
hang on, Jeff.
I'm curious from your end.
Jeff, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry about that. Go ahead. Keep. Oh, okay. You said 1%. That was the last thing you said.
Yeah, no, that's okay. And when you think of Omar, I mean, this guy was certainly preeminent shortstop in the American League. I loved watching him play. I worked for the Red Sox and Yankees before coming to Cooperstown and got to see him early on in Seattle and Cleveland. And the percentage that he got is a good indication that he's respected by the writers. And, you know, you never know if he'll make it, but his career numbers are gaudy. He's one of the greatest shortstops I've ever seen play.
Jeff, with that in mind, you know, we've been kicking it around here quite a bit. Edgar Martinez got close this year. And for folks who have said about Omar, and obviously we beat the drum for Omar. We love the guy, loved watching him play night in, night out. Edgar Martinez was truly a one-dimensional player. You know, Edgar was a designated hitter. And not to disparage anything he did, because he was a great hitter. You know, certainly Hall of Fame candidate, and certainly, you know, maybe Hall of Fame worthy one day. But not only was Omar a great glove, but he also was a pretty darn good hitter. And, you know, one of our listeners sent me stats. He said, hey, here's your great comp, Phil Rizzuto. And Omar's numbers are much better than Phil's. Phil played on some great teams in New York, and that obviously helps. But if the Hall can allow folks, if the writers will vote in guys like Edgar maybe one day, who didn't pick up a glove, basically, I would think that being a great glove would carry a little more weight than it seems to.
Well, You know, you absolutely. Defense needs to be a part of it, and I don't agree with your comps, because to me it's about the comps for me are how great were you at your position in your league in the era in which you played. I mean, you know, MLB dictated what the rules of a designator hitter will be, and it's fair to say it's one-dimensional because you don't field, but it's not the player's fault that he's put into that role. And that's why Paul Molitor and Frank Thomas have plaques in Cooperstown. But if you look at Omar against the field of shortstops in the era in which he played, I think you'd find that he ranks very favorably. And that, to me, is the comp. And Phil Rizzuto played in a different era, different circumstances. And my point being is that when you look at Omar's career, it stands on its own.
Does it taint Omar that he had the glove during an era where guys like Jeter and A-Rod had the bat and the glove?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, okay. I think you look at the totality. When you look, you have to look at the totality of a player. You have to look at the position in which he played. And, you know, when you look at Omar, you have to compare him to Jeter and A-Rod and those guys because they all played in the same era at the same position. But the fact that Omar did as well as he did in his first year on the ballot, when you look at his career, you think that that bodes well for him. And look, if he doesn't make the Hall of Fame, it doesn't take anything away from him. I mean, we're talking 9 years from now, we're going to be having this conversation if that happens. But the man had an unbelievable career. And right now, he just had his first year on the ballot, did fairly well, and we'll see what happens over time.
Jeff Idelson, president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, joining us on Baskin and Phelps right here on 92.3 The Fan. You know, I thought it was really interesting to listen to Jim on the other end of the phone when he got that phone call saying that he was in. What's it like for you when you see these guys walk into the hall knowing that they're going to become a member of the Hall of Fame? Like, to me, I see these guys as a kid that were just bigger than life to me, and I'm assuming that you get to see them in an unbelievably humbling position when they walk in there and realize all the great names that are on the wall and that their name will be in there too.
Yeah. Well, you know, you saw it, like you said, yeah. You saw it or you heard it from how Jim reacted. And I mean, you know, this is a guy whose career is unquestionable. And what it tells you and shows me and what I've learned over 24 years at the Hall of Fame is that, you know, and having worked for two ball clubs before coming to Cooperstown, is that there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. And the guys that end up making it into the Hall of Fame are good enough that they can be confident. Those that don't make it, you know, a lot of times there's an arrogance there because they're not good enough to be confident. And you take that for Jimmy, and then he's just an unbelievably humble guy on top of it. You can see why it's emotional and humbling for him as it is for all of them.
That was a great line, Jeff. That confidence line is a great one. Let me ask you what you think moving forward is going to happen with guys like Manny Ramirez, who, of course, we enjoyed here for a long time before we went to Boston, and Sammy Sosa and Bonds and some of the other guys who clearly were caught up in the whole steroid era. What happens with these guys in the eyes of the baseball writers down the road? Because clearly their numbers are Hall of Fame worthy, but yet tainted for good reason, I would think. What do you think? How does that progress?
Well, it's not an easy task having a vote, and it's easy for us to look at it without having to put a check mark next to guys' names. But I think there's a few things that are important. Number one, for those that haven't been to Cooperstown, and hopefully we're going to see all of Cleveland there this summer to support Jim Thome, it's a museum, first and foremost. It's a massive history museum that tells the history of the game all the way back to its beginnings and its relationship to American culture. And whether or not you're in the Hall of Fame, Yan Gomes is in the Hall of Fame as the first Brazilian. So, I mean, it's part of the museum. So my point being is that if a guy doesn't make it in as a Hall of Famer, it doesn't mean his career isn't there for people to understand and put into context. As it relates to the voting, you know, the voters getting 75% of people to agree on anything. I mean, the two of you and I could sit here, and I don't know if all three of us would agree that the sun was out. So, I mean, to get them to agree on a player's career is difficult unto its own. It's a subjective set of rules where we tell voters to look at a player's ability and that we think the character, integrity, and sportsmanship matters. It's up to the voters to determine how much they want to weigh those individual factors. And at the end of the day, they're a microcosm of society and reflective of how society feels about topics, and it could change from year to year. So it's hard to know what'll happen down the line.
Jeff Idelson joining us. Jeff, just real quick, just a little bit more than just the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. I mean, I hear so many young kids go there for baseball tournaments from here in Northeast Ohio all the time. They all come back with this amazing experience of being able to play not, you know, Little League Baseball and be able to go to the museum as well. Can you just give us a, just share us your thoughts on Cooperstown, the city, and you know it's only like a 7-hour drive from Cleveland. Just give us a little bit more on Cooperstown for the folks that just haven't made the ride over yet.
Yeah, you're right. It's 7 hours. I've been to Cleveland a bunch. I love going to see the Indians and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Cavs and the Christmas Story House. I mean, Cleveland's more than a bucket list trip for me. It's only 7 hours, so it's not a far ride. But it's a really pretty town. It's a town of 1800 with one stoplight. If you've ever heard of Norman Rockwell, it's like stepping into one of his paintings. And then you have the Hall of Fame that sits on Main Street in the middle of this little village. And it's this massive, 50,000-plus square foot museum. Youth baseball camp surrounding it. There's three of them, and so you see a lot of your own, yourself when you come to Cooperstown. It's like yourself coming back in your little league days, and you come into the Hall of Fame thinking you're going to see history, and invariably you see your own history. And if you come for induction weekend, you not only do you see Jimmy Tomey, but you see 60 other Hall of Famers around, and it's kind of like your baseball cards come into life.
Ah. My family and I made the trip about 3 years ago, Jeff, and we loved it. We had a great time in Cooperstown. We had a great time at the Hall of Fame. So I'd recommend it to anybody. And I must admit, I was amazed. You rented one of those that was a bed and breakfast type thing. We stayed in just off the main street, and we walked up, and I looked, and I thought, that's the Hall of Fame, because it seemed like it was like a library in town, because it's so seamlessly built into downtown. I thought it was just a fabulous setting. So I'd suggest anybody make the trip. It's well worth it.
Thank you. That's nice. It's kind of like living on a college campus. That's how I look at Cooperstown. It's like a little bit of a big college campus. And then working at the Hall of Fame is like being in college, because everybody challenges each other in nerdy baseball academic ways. And at the end of the day, our job is to present baseball's history, do it factually, and let parents and their children understand it and create their own value judgments about how they feel about it.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much. We appreciate your time, and we hope for the induction that it turns into Cleveland East there in Cooperstown that weekend.
Awesome.
So it should be overwhelming and great for Indians fans to make the trek over for Jim Tomey's induction. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, Jeff and Andy, thank you. Have a great afternoon.
We'll talk to you soon. Jeff Idelson, nice enough to join us, president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. That was outstanding.
Yep.
This is so cool. I don't know why. I just keep reminiscing about being a little kid this morning, and I think that's what baseball does to you.
Have you been there?
I have not been there.
You need to make the trip.
And I was a camp counselor up there for one summer, and where I was like, we got to go over. But I think at the time I was too young, and drinking was too important to me at that time.
Nice.
Just being honest.
That's great news.
I mean, I was only like 21.
Good for the image.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.